Hey, Producer Trey here. Welcome to the Watchdog Chronicles, brought to you by Don's Easy Pay. I know usually there's this fun, lighthearted banner at the beginning of every episode, but before we meet this next guest, I gotta give you cats a disclaimer. Kina is a recovering addict. Parts of her story are kind of hard to listen to and can be triggering. Please keep that in mind before listening to this episode. If you're sensitive to subjects like this, this might not be the episode for you. If you or a loved one are suffering from addiction, there are options. I'd like to direct you to SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. You can find them at samhsa.gov or their helpline, which is 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-4357. Stay safe and enjoy the show.
You're listening to The Ouachita Chronicles.
Welcome to this episode of the Ouachita Chronicles. I'm your host, Ashley Smith, along with my co-host, Jerry.
Hello.
You're here today, right, Jerry?
Here, present, accounted for.
Yeah, it's more than you can say for me right now. I don't feel very present and accounted for, but we're going to roll with it.
What is reality?
What is reality? But that is a really great segue into our guest today. What is reality? Should we escape it? Do we need to? Or are there better ways to cope with life? There are, right?
There are.
So today's guest in the studio is Kina Ashcraft. And Kina, you've got a million different titles, but I mean, I want to call you a survivor.
Thank you.
That's what I believe you truly are, because that encompasses everything that you've done over your journey. So say hello to the entire world.
Hello, entire world.
We're really just going to start here with all the way back to, you know, childhood, get a little bit of background on you, and then we'll move forward through your story. So were you born in MENA or you?
I was not. I was born in Colorado Springs, and we lived there until I was six. My parents divorced, and we moved to Arkansas because my grandparents lived here.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I'm just a South Polk County girl for the most part, and I graduated from Van Cove High School before it was the Cahsatot River School District. I was the last graduating class.
Oh, cool.
Van Cove High. Mm-hmm. So growing up in a blended family, a large blended family, and there were six of us kids in the home. I have good parents, but, you know, parents are learning to be people themselves when they have children. And so at times it was definitely dysfunctional, but otherwise, you know, pretty great childhood. There was no abuse in the home. There was no sexual assault, anything like that. We were raised up with morals and values and respect and a good work ethic. And so overall, my upbringing, you know, it was pretty good.
There were no major triggers or huge traumatic events aside from divorce and moving.
Not really. But my biological father passed away when I was 13. That was pretty rough on me. And it was my little brother's dad as well. And he was 9. And so I never really dealt with that. I thought since I was the big sister that I had to be strong for him, you know, because I knew I didn't understand what was going on, so he couldn't understand what was going on. And so I worked through that stuff much later in life.
I'm going to interject real
quick. Yeah, absolutely.
Because this hits very close to home,
of course,
for me right now, obviously. And people will ask me, as you know, my husband passed away a few months back, and people will say, well, how are your kids doing? And I deal with things through humor. That's how I handle life, right? Mm-hmm. And so I say all the time, well, I mean, they're as good as can be expected, but, you know, they're not going to process this till they're 30.
Absolutely.
So you, having firsthand experience, and you're saying, sitting here going, I didn't really process it till later in life.
Yeah, and not to, obviously not to scare you, because your children's lives are going to be different than my life was, but I processed my dad's death when I was incarcerated. I was in treatment, and that was part of my treatment plan was, you know, going through my life and thinking of big events that maybe I hadn't thought about or grieved or dealt with. And so that was life-changing for me, which I'll touch on my treatment a little bit later. Later, but, you know, that place saved my life and it helped me to work through things that I didn't even know I needed to work through.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I was 25 years old. That's a long time to have
before you really
just
face
like
that.
Tuck right. something away and not, you know, not gone through it.
Mm-hmm.
So grief is funny, though.
And compartmentalization works for some things, but other things you just don't need to put in a box.
It's still there, you know, it never really goes away.
I like to say I have Fort Knox in my head right now, so. We're keeping it locked up for a while.
That's right.
All right. So teenage years in MENA or Polk County.
Polk County. Yeah. Yes. Like I said, I did attend school in Cove. We actually lived in Hatfield, and I worked close to full-time hours here in MENA. I worked at Street Performance. That was my very first job. My whole family worked there. I mean, I grew up there around the hot rods and that sort of stuff. And then I also worked at McDonald's when I was in high school. I worked at McDonald's for 4 years throughout high school.
So you kept a pretty stable existence.
Absolutely. I was very responsible. You know, there was a thing in my family because there's so many kids, you know, they can't just be buying cars for all of their children. So we were allowed to get our driver's license as soon as we were old enough, as long as we wanted to buy our own cars and do the upkeep and pay the insurance. And so I did that. And I was very responsible, paid all my vehicle stuff. And then when I was 17, mostly just because I could and it was more convenient, I moved out of my parents' house in Hatfield and got my own place. And when I graduated, I was paying all of my own bills. So I just led a pretty simple and responsible life. And I keep saying responsible, but I use that word because later, it's like I lost all of that.
It was a very adult life for your age.
Absolutely.
You grew up quickly.
Very, very quickly.
Okay, so we'll just get right to the meat of it. I mean, what happened? At what point? Or can we maybe even go back and say, did you dabble in any substances as a teenager, or did you really stay straight and narrow through that?
So growing up as a teenager, my parents, they would throw parties with their work friends and that sort of stuff on the weekends, not like hardcore parties, but just like barbecues, get together, everybody drank.
Yeah.
You know, and I would.
It's not a kid's birthday party if we're not having a beer in hand.
That's exactly right. So, you know, everybody would drink and hang out. We just listen to music and that sort of stuff. Other people would bring their kids, you know, and we'd sleep on the trampoline, you know, just that sort of stuff. I would make my dad's drinks, and he was usually like a whiskey and coke kind of guy, and I always got the first drink of it, you know, that was just kind of the little thing or whatever. As I got older, one of my brothers, who's older than me, moved out, and he had his own place, and I used to go spend the weekends there, and I was probably like 15, I guess. And, you know, they'd party and I'd drink with them, you know, but not like I didn't have a problem with it, you know, definitely too young to be taking part in that sort of lifestyle or shenanigans, really, you know, is all it was, you know, but it wasn't an issue for me. And I guess I probably smoked pot when I was younger once or twice, but that was about it, you know. Growing up, I knew that my mom, she shared with me that when she was younger, she did every drug you could think of. And actually, when she found out she was pregnant with me, 2 months pregnant with me, she was pretty out there. And so she said she prayed to God for me to be okay, you know, healthy, and she wouldn't ever use anything again. I'm healthy. I wouldn't say normal, but
but physically you're all there.
Well enough for her to keep her promise as far as the harder stuff goes. She definitely was a drinker growing up and not, we call it a high functioning alcoholic, I guess. And she's very recently quit drinking, and I couldn't be more proud of her. That was a 30 plus year situation that she was in that she's overcome. Coming mostly on her own. So I'm really proud for her and of her. That's a big thing. Moving on, after I graduated, I got pregnant. Boyfriend at the time and the father of my son, he was 19 and I was 18, and he already had a son from a previous relationship. Him and his high school girlfriend got pregnant in high school, and their parents made them get married, and they had a little boy. And honestly, I fell in love with his little boy. He was just a sweet little baby. and so, so anyways, you know, we ended up getting together very quickly, move in with each other. It all went really fast, and next thing I know, we've been together about a year, and I'm pregnant, you know. First I was nervous and like, oh gosh, what if I'm a terrible mom, you know. I think that's regular. But then I was like, well, you know, he's already a dad, and you know, I'm already kind of standing in as a stepmother to this child. I'm like, it's okay, we'll be okay, you know, we'll handle this. About 2.5 months in, he just got weird, and I thought he was just scared, you know, like, what are we gonna do with these two kids? And probably about the third month, one day he just didn't come home. It was our weekend to have his son, and they just never came home, and I worried, and I called, and I called, and he didn't answer, and I was terrified. And finally, I called and he answered, and I was like, are you okay? You know, where are you? And he said, oh, we're at my parents. I'm not coming home. So, you know, of course, at the time, I'm like 19 years old, and I just think that that's the end of the world, you know, like.
Well, that was your whole world.
Yeah, at the time. Absolutely. Yeah. And so I'm distraught. So anyways, to kind of wrap that up a little bit, He'd actually had an affair and cheated on me while I was pregnant. Mm. And that was rough. That was hard on me. The person that he cheated on me with was also very close to me. She was my best friend. And so...
That was a double punch.
Thinking,
not just a,
yeah, yeah, thinking mm-hmm. of the two people that I was closest to and that I trust the most to have done something like that to me was pretty rough to process. And then I was like, well, who do you trust now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I went through, I don't want to say the entire pregnancy, but most of the pregnancy, I went through on my own because he had moved to Tulsa to find work. And so he didn't make it to, you know, baby appointments. I think he came for the ultrasound. And we worked together, you know, we weren't really hard on each other, but...
But you didn't have the support mm-mm. that yeah. one would normally have with right. a partner in the home, or even not in the home, but if they were just available yeah, to just be there as you needed.
Right.
You did not have that.
Absolutely.
At 19 years old, pregnant, yeah. and first child.
First baby, yeah. yeah.
so much.
It was a lot, and looking back on it now, it's like, it was a lot at that time. Now I'm like, meh. You know, if it had happened to me later on in life after I had learned something or been through some things, maybe not such mm-hmm. a big deal, but back then it was rough on me.
But life doesn't care.
No, mm-hmm. does not
life
care.
Life does not care mm-hmm. if you're ready for this nope. or not, what you have already experienced, what you think you can handle. Life's like, here you go.
Yeah, mm-hmm. take it.
Yeah.
Whenever Trace was born, they both came down and they were both in the delivery room and
the mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the
yeah
wait a minute, wait.
Well, let me go back a little bit and tell you that at that time I had my suspicion, but I didn't know for sure that they were together.
Correct. Okay, gotcha.
So yeah,
the betrayal,
it was the worst, especially since whenever I was talking about who was going to be in the delivery room and I mentioned her, he didn't want her in there. He was
for I bet
he
didn't now.
He was very adamant, like, I don't want her in there. I just think it'd be better if it was just your mom and my mom and me. And I was
and you're
like,
sitting here thinking, this is this person who I care about yeah. and I want present for this.
We've been best friends for mm-hmm. you know, since like the third grade. And so I'm like, well, it's me out there for everyone to see, so it's not your choice. And when it...
Sorry, the visual there.
Yeah.
I'm the one flashing everything to the me. Entire delivery and room, so I'm going to pick and choose who is in
exactly.
the peanut gallery.
And so finally, towards the very end there, I said, listen, I pick who's in here or you don't get to be, you know? And I don't want to do that, you know? It's a crappy thing to do, but,
right.
you know, I'm not going to argue with you about this. So then, of course, they were both in there. They both stayed the night with me and the baby at the hospital.
Listeners, if you could just see Jerry's face at this point. Yeah.
We just let Jerry process for a minute.
You're good.
And then after that, we went on with our lives. And he stayed here in Mena for a week. He took a week off work after Trace was born. And then he went back to Tulsa and they went on about their lives. And I, you know, went on about being a single mom with a full-time job. I was only off work for 2 weeks after I had Trace. That was my choice.
Mm-hmm.
So I took off my 2 weeks, and right the weekend before I was going to go back to work, I planned a trip to Tulsa to go up, you know, just have like a hangout or do whatever, relax, take this baby because you helped make him, mm-hmm. and I'm going to go do whatever I want to with this best friend. And so
the best friend who lived in Tulsa?
That's the one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, I'll give you the short part of that. I finally basically sniffed my way around and had something solid to prove to them, you know, that I knew all the while that I had asked in the past. It was always like, no, what are you talking about? Why would we do that? That's my question.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to know. And so anyways, it all came to a head there and I was angry. And I think that, well, first of all, obviously anger is a secondary emotion. So most likely underneath that, I was very hurt. But at the time I was just angry. And that was also a lot to process, but I didn't process it,
mm-hmm.
you know. So spent the weekend there still and didn't really do anything fun because, you know, it was tense in there.
Yeah, and just had a anvil dropped on your head.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And then I just came back to Mena, went back to my regular life, went back to work, and I was tired.
Mm-hmm.
I was tired all the time. And I'm a new mom, and I'm hoping that I'm doing all this right. And I go to work all day. My baby goes to the babysitter, and I pick him up, and I come home, and I'm tired. So, you know, the dishes start piling up, and the house is a mess. And one day, I just remember being at work and a couple of girls that I worked with saying, I wish I had a little extra cash to get something to help me have the energy to clean the house. I have extra cash.
I would like some energy.
I would like to clean my house because I feel like I'm not doing my son any justice as a mother. Like, okay, I love him, but then we just come home to this filthy house and I have to wash a bottle before I can feed him. Like, and so there it went. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what I was getting myself into.
You had no experience. None. Experience whatsoever.
None.
with drugs of that level.
I didn't know. I'd never even heard the word methamphetamine.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what we were going to get. I didn't even realize, like, I mean, I can't put into words how much I didn't know
mm-hmm.
what I was getting myself into.
Now, until you're on the other side of it.
Until I was on the other side of it. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, obviously, I knew that what we were doing was sketchy. You know, I'm a pretty good reader of the situation, you know.
Right.
This isn't something we're supposed to be doing, but I didn't
but how
know
bad
how
can
bad it
be?
Was. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right. One of the girls from work and I drove to D-Queen and met her sister, and that day I did my first line of meth.
And this was at 19?
19 years old, mm-hmm. and I had a three-month-old baby.
Having that much on your shoulders at 19 and like you said, not knowing what you were getting yourself into. I mean, there's plenty of people at a young age who have experience with that around mm-hmm. here. So at that point, they're like, oh, yeah, I definitely do need this. But you had no clue.
I didn't know. And not that that makes my story any better or worse than, you know, any other addicts, but because it breaks my heart. You know, I've met a lot of addicts, especially women, you know, that their families were shooting them up when they were 9 years old, you know, because that's their lifestyle. They were forced into it. Yeah, yeah, and they don't know any different. They don't know a different way to live.
Mm-hmm.
This is what life is supposed to look like to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
generational curses.
It's it, absolutely. But I had never seen anything like it. I had never seen the lifestyle. I'd never seen what it does to people. And I went from doing my first line of meth to selling ounces a day in MENA in about 6 months.
Jesus.
Ashley, I'm so glad you're my best friend.
What do you want?
Well, help all the time. You know, my life is a mess, always. How long have you known me? And it's always seems to be a mess. And that's why you're the sunshine of my life. And I'm hoping that as the sunshine of my life, you've got some type of information for me to help me get a little bit more independent.
Girl, I don't know that I got that much energy. But speaking of energy, you know I just bought a new house, right?
Well, yeah.
So this new house that I bought has extremely high ceilings,
mm-hmm.
okay, and lots of rooms. And no backup heat source. I'm feeling like my electric bills are going to be sky high.
You being the sunshine of my life is not going to help you with your electric bills.
No, but you know what will?
What?
Calling Area Solar. Okay, so Area Solar is local. They're based out of Hatfield, Arkansas, and they serve Polk County and surrounding counties.
Nice.
Let me give you some facts on solar. Solar is now less expensive than grid electricity. Solar systems can pay back in about 10 years. Solar energy is free and renewable. The sun will shine for many years to come, just like me. In your mm-hmm. life. And solar energy also avoids burning of fossil fuels like coal and natural gas that contribute to global warming. Solar is efficient. It's generated right where it's used. And tax credits. Currently, the tax credit is 26% on all solar-related installations. So Area Solar can install two different types of solar-powered systems. Off-grid, which requires batteries but can be anywhere in the woods or just backup power when the power goes out. And then the grid tied. That actually connects to a power company to lower your electric bill to a base rate, generally about $20 or so a month.
Nice. That's the kind of cash I need back in my pocket.
I'm going to call Riley Johnson. He is our local Area Solar expert. If you think that solar might be the next step for you, you got to give Riley Johnson a call at Area Solar, 870-389-6115. So your personal usage at that time was... just yeah. as much as you could probably get your hands on.
Absolutely. And it took a little while, a couple weeks. You know, I would do it on the weekend or I would, you know, that's how it all gets started, you know, like, oh, well, we'll do it on the weekend.
This is recreational.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And then it's funny because now I know the terms for things like that, recreational or functioning,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's not really... that's not actually a thing, but anyways. But I didn't even know those terms back then. I had zero knowledge of the world that I was about to take a huge step into.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, eventually, it was actually pretty quickly, I lost my job due to just not showing up on time. You know, I would oversleep whenever I was coming down or, you know, something like that. And so very quickly I got, you know, the limit of no calls, no shows or being late to work. And so they let me go. And my partner at the time also worked at McDonald's and they let her go as well for the same thing, obviously. And so then we don't have a job. Like, how are we going to buy dope? Well, we'll sell it. We'll sell it, and then we will not have to worry about buying it because that's going to support what we have going on. Now, I will tell you that I didn't start using with her. We met after I began using, but she did have much more experience in that sort of environment than I did. And so I kind of just followed the lead, you know, like, I'm going to do whatever you say because you know what's going on here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so now I lived in a whole new world that I still didn't really know was going to end up so badly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a place and I still had my car and she had a son and I had a son and we were, you know, we were both good to each other's kids and we cared for each other and each other's children. And, you know, I lived in this little fantasy world where we were a family and we just used meth.
Mm-hmm.
To clean the house or to bathe the children. My excuse or my, you know, like what I would tell myself, well, the kids are always bathed and the house is mm-hmm. always clean and laundry is always done.
And, right.
What's the harm in what we've got going on? Then I started shooting up and I just wanted to try it. You know, the guy who we were, our dealer, who was became a friend of ours and actually moved in with us, that's the way he did it. And so, you know, I'm bored. I don't have a job. I just sit around the house all the time, you know. So why not just try it, you know? But I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know, you know. So my only option was to ask him to do it for me, you know. And for a long time, he told me no.
Because he knew.
Yeah, because he knew. And he said, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to put that on you. He used to always tell me that I was better. Then, Kenny, you're better than this.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I'm like, don't tell me what to do.
For the average listener that has no experience mm-hmm. whatsoever with this, I do, not as in personally myself, but as in people in my life that I've been around. I've heard it over and over again that once you get to the point where you are injecting methamphetamines, that you never want to do it any other way. And you don't come back from that.
That's a pretty true statement. I will say that I wasn't any worse off. You know, I didn't start IV use and then my whole life went to crap, you mm-hmm. know, or anything like that. It was already kind of there,
right?
You know? So a lot of people think like once you start IV use that you're just like, that's the end of it for you, mm-hmm. you know? There's no coming back and you basically like a death sentence almost. It just depends on the person.
Right. Obviously. Not for everybody, obviously.
Not for everybody, right.
You're sitting here living proof
yeah,
of that.
Right here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, once I started shooting it up, I didn't, you know, I didn't want to do it any differently. So much so that I wouldn't even take, like, if someone else offered, like, hey, you know, I got a little stuff, you want to do a line? And that was the only option that I had. I wouldn't do it
mm-hmm.
because it seemed like it was a waste to me. I wasn't going to get what I wanted. And so there was no sense in doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I would say that that's a true statement. And it affects everyone differently, obviously. We ended up kicked out of the place that we lived because it was on my girlfriend's family's property. So next thing I knew, me, my girlfriend, my son, her mother took hers, our drug dealer and his daughter were living in a hotel room in Waldron.
Oh my gosh.
Whose idea was that?
Okay, not trying to laugh here.
But seriously.
But the way you're laying
like,
this out.
Yes, what?
Exactly. Whose idea? Who came up with this bright idea?
I literally don't even like, I just remember packing as much as we could fit into our Jeep Cherokee and not even having enough room for us and the people and the pit bulls, what? And just driving. And our dealer had this guy he knew who lived like way out in the boonies in Y City. And he's like, we'll just go there and we'll, you know, gather our thoughts basically. And gather our thoughts ended up moving into a hotel in Waldron.
Mm-hmm.
I can't quite put a timeline on how long we were there. There was a lot going on then, and there was obviously a lot of drugs and a lot of people in and out and a lot of really sketchy situations that me and my son definitely didn't have any business being involved in. But by that time, I was just as addicted to the power of selling and the power of money, power of the game itself, you know? That's something that I think a lot of people don't know or don't understand is, you know, once you get involved all the way, once you're all the way in there, there's much more to break loose from than just the meth.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt good.
It infiltrates every part of your life.
All of it.
Every single part. It's,
absolutely.
It's not just something that you can do
yeah.
and separate from everything else. Mm-hmm. No, it affects every single portion of your yeah. life.
And I mean, like, it sounds really stupid now, but back then I was the dope dealer.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and in that lifestyle, that's as, you know, that's as good as it gets, mm-hmm. you know.
You're top dog in that yeah, environment.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I answered to, you know, we answered to one person that lived in a different state, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so that was, at that time, that was as good as you could live, you know, minus the car being broke down all the time and squeezing a whole family of people and dogs into a 2-bed hotel room, mm-hmm. you know, putting your children in dangerous situations. But if you forget about all that, we were living the high life.
Mm-hmm. And meth can make you forget about all that.
Oh, yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
And there's always, you know, there's always a justification and permission statements and things that we tell ourselves as addicts that make us feel better. When we really start to think about it, and we're like, oh, you know, there was that sketchy guy in here. That was a really close call. And my son was in the bathroom the whole time, or we were in the bathroom and my son was out there the whole time. But then you're like, well, I mean, you know, I know what I'm doing, or he's gone now, so it's okay. We just won't sell to him anymore, mm-hmm. or, you know, just for an example. And so, like I said, I don't really know exactly how long we were there, but it was a bit of time. And things just were very rocky at that point, you know, being stuck in a hotel room with the same people constantly, using one vehicle. We were, you know, very often making trips back and forth from Waldron to Mena because, you know, we were supplying those people still. And so it was always like, it was always just a game of, you know, get the illegal stuff from one point to another. And the more often that we did it, the more, at least I really can't speak for anyone else in the situation, but the more I felt bulletproof.
Mm-hmm. Bold. You know,
how many times bold. Have I driven right past an officer and they had no idea. They had no idea that I'm, you know, carrying Lord knows how much meth on me at any given time. And so I was stuck in that, you know, I was stuck in that, and it was chaos, and it was a mess. My life was a mess, and I didn't even know, you know? But things, going back to what I was saying, things got uncomfortable, you know? Tensions run high, things, you know, wouldn't go right, and then everybody's in an argument. People would stay up for days at a time, and then, you know, the dealer would accuse my girlfriend of taking the last of his dope, or whatever the case may be. It was a living nightmare. Everyone was always, I was uncomfortable walking on eggshells, trying not to make anyone mad, trying not to seem like I was doing suspicious things, you know, just so we didn't have to argue anymore. And we had gotten word that there was going to be a bust at our hotel, and it was our room that they were coming for. I didn't want to be a part of that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and my girlfriend didn't want to be a part of that either. So we made a plan, and we reluctantly decided to, we didn't have anywhere to go together.
Mm-hmm.
We reluctantly decided to go our separate ways. She went and stayed with this guy that she knew, and I just went couch hopping with my son.
With your son.
Yeah. Absolutely. Still justifying my behavior by like, well, at least I'm raising him.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't dropped him off at my mom's house yet.
Right. He's here with me.
Yeah. You know, like, give me a break, Gina. You know? There's no reason to behave like this, but addiction tells you otherwise, you know? So now I'm just couch hopping. I'm at the new hotspot in Mena and basically earning my keep by making sure the house stays clean, and I go grocery shopping and things like that. People are in and out all day, all night.
Mm-hmm.
My baby's probably like 9 months old at this point. The timelines are really blurry for me, and it really irritates me sometimes when I think about it because I'm like, that was my kid's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Milestone ages.
You realize you missed so much.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I really can't place a timeline on a lot of stuff, and so that's really frustrating for me. So anyways, you know, from there it's from couch to couch, from dope house to dope house. Sometime I would end up at my parents' house and they would be like, why are you sleeping all the time? Your baby needs you to take care of him. And of course I'm like, oh, I just don't feel good or whatever. All the while my parents caught on a long time ago, but they didn't have any proof. You know, I lost a lot of weight very quickly. And at that time I didn't have a lot of weight. So, you know, it was pretty obvious pretty quick. I was covered in bruises from, you know, shooting up or just from being unhealthy and bruising very easily. And I looked like, can I say that?
Yeah.
I looked like, yes. It was awful. I really could not stand to look at myself in the mirror. One day I put on a pair of pants and they were so loose that I didn't know that they were mine. They're my favorite pants.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to love wearing them. And I put them on one day and I'm like, these can't be my pants. And I don't know how I didn't notice, you know, the progression, obviously because I just see myself every day, or maybe because I wasn't looking at myself every day. But that was a huge moment for me that I will never forget. There was nothing to me, not any curves or fat. my whole body was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just eaten up. And but that didn't change my mind
right.
for what I was doing.
You noticed it and you were aware. But
I looked at myself less in the mirror because mm-hmm. I didn't want to think about it.
Compartmentalization.
Absolutely. All the while, my girlfriend ends up with this guy that mm-hmm. she moves in with, obviously. And so throughout quite a few years, I'm just like in and out of their life. There's a lot of drugs involved. There's a lot of toxicity and violence, and they used me very often. I was brought around whenever I was the only one that had a job. So mm-hmm. when I would get paid or I waitressed. And so at that point, like just making enough tips to buy some dope was the name of the game during the day, you know? Mm-hmm. And then when the money ran out and the dope ran out, then I had to go home, you know? It was always a fight or something, and then it was time for me to leave. And I let that go on for so long because I just wanted to be there,
mm-hmm.
And I wanted something that didn't exist anymore. We were all very different people. She was very different than when we met, and now I was just there for when it was convenient.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Ashley.
So, you know, we have this thing in the South here that we call floating. You heard of floating?
I've heard of the floating. I've been floatin'. On a float or two.
So I, for a long time, have had a bucket list float.
Oh,
yeah.
Tell me about your bucket list.
My bucket list float is to float the Buffalo River. The Buffalo River is America's first national river, and it's located in north central Arkansas in the gorgeous Ozark Mountains.
Yeah, I floated it actually as a child, and the best place to do that is at Buffalo River Outfitters. Buffalo River Outfitters is an authorized concessionaire on the Buffalo National River. They're located in St. Joe, Arkansas, and they've got floating and access to camping and fishing, hiking's around, all your needs are taken care of at BRO. The bros will hook you up.
They've got canoes, kayaks, rafts, shuttle service.
Yeah, if floating is your thing, they've got one-day trips or multiple-day trips, and they're all made easier by renting from BRO. When you're on your float, you can see beautiful limestone bluffs, the wilderness, and unparalleled scenic beauty.
And then, after you've spent a long day on the river, you can cozy up in one of BRO's spacious and comfortable log cabins. They've got stone fireplaces, wide porches, fully equipped kitchens, wooded settings. They've got cozy cabins for two, or cabins big enough to accommodate 10 people.
Y'all should definitely visit the Buffalo River Outfitters store and stock up on everything you need while you're there for your Ozark adventure.
And their knowledgeable staff can accommodate any questions about the Buffalo National River. You can also order books and maps online to prepare for your visit with them.
So if you're ready to plan your Buffalo River adventure, you've got to check out BuffaloRiverOutfitters.com to find out more and book conveniently online. Give them a call at 870-439-2200 and follow them on Facebook and Instagram.
When are we taking our bucket list trip? I mean, you got to go with me. You're my best friend.
Well, let's do it soon.
Soon.
In between all that, I get arrested.
I was going to ask, when was mm-hmm. your first...
And she was with me.
Okay.
We borrowed a guy that we knew. We borrowed his truck, and we were headed to my connection in Oklahoma, and we came up over the hill by the Faith Missionary Baptist Church. Ironically, I now attend that church, and this was before Scott Sawyer was the sheriff, and mm-hmm. he had somebody pulled over there. Whether we did or did not swerve, whether the situation was or wasn't sketchy, it's not for me to say these days, but he left that traffic stop and immediately pulled out behind us. Now, at this point, my girlfriend... she's hiding her things and doing all this stuff. And me at the time, still pretty naive, no knowledge of how the law works at all. I just leave my stuff where it's at. And when I say my stuff, I mean my paraphernalia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we really didn't have any meth on us because we were going to get some.
Mm-hmm.
But there was baggies with residue and there was mm-hmm. needles. And
you had the utensils.
All the utensils. But I wasn't worried. We weren't doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
The claim was that there was a report of a vehicle matching the description of the vehicle we were driving, bashing mailboxes in the area earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that is the truth or it's not the truth, I don't know. We were obviously, at this point, very well known and very well watched.
Mm-hmm.
So he asked to search the vehicle, and she told him yes. At this point, I still feel like it's no big deal. My stuff's in my purse. He said, search the vehicle, right?
Mm-hmm.
He goes directly to the passenger side where I was sitting and gets right into my purse. And that was it. He had me pull my sleeves up, saw my track marks. you know, and obviously I was at that point left with no choice except for to be mostly honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I say mostly honest because addicts are never completely honest whenever they're put in a situation like that. I tried to tell him we gave a girl a ride and she left her stuff in the car. Obviously I wasn't buying that. And, you know, so I kind of stuck with the story. I've already said the story, so why would I go back on that? If you're going to lie, you got to try to at least keep your lies together, right? And so I end up in the back of a police car. He never found the stuff that was on my girlfriend, and so she was allowed to go. Unfortunately, I was the one with the drug money, which prior to it being the drug money was the electric bill money.
Mm-hmm.
And we planned to go make some extra money off of what we were going to get. Obviously, that never happened. They confiscated the money. They confiscated a cell phone for me. And, of course, all the things that were in my purse that were paraphernalia.
Was your son with you at the time?
He was not. Okay. He was with his dad. It was his dad's weekend. And so I'm thankful for that. Wish that I could say that I never took him
mm-hmm.
to the dope man's house. I never took him inside the dope man's house. That's not different. And I'd like to just say my son never saw us do any deals. He never saw us do any drugs. He never heard us talk about it. We did do all of that in a separate room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of us would stay out with the kids and the other, you know,
right.
would go in and deal or whatever the situation was. But like I said, that's still not different.
Right.
You
right.
know, so I spend 5 days in jail. I spend those whole 5 days because I wouldn't snitch on my drug dealer. And so that was irritating for them,
mm-hmm.
Obviously. And when I
can see you being stubborn.
I was so stubborn. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you something. When they woke me up in the middle of the night while I'm coming down and took me down to this office, this bright office, while everyone else was sleeping to ask me a million questions, I wasn't coming off of any information and I was angry.
Mm-hmm.
I was so angry and I was so stubborn and I still thought that I knew everything about everything. But when I sat down in that office chair, the officer that was talking to me said, "Miss Relaford, we've waited a long time to have you sit in that chair." And thinking about that now, it hits me like a ton of bricks.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, it fed my ego.
Yeah, yeah. You were like, oh, I'm a star.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a well-known name. Wow. Big player in the game right now.
You know, and that's weird. Mm-hmm. It's really weird because I was still in jail.
Right.
It didn't matter. I was still sitting in that chair. But they knew me, you know. I don't like the way they went about questioning me and the tactics they used, in my opinion then, in my opinion now. They brought my son up. They made a point to mention him,
mm-hmm.
Mention my custody situation. I remember the officer saying, "Well, it'd be a real shame for your son to have a mom with 2 felony drug charges. And I said, the last thing that I said to him in that room was, "Well, where I come from, snitches don't get stitches. They get gone and nobody asks any questions. And so I think it'd be better for my son to have a mom with felonies rather than a dead mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to go back to my cell now." That was rough. And that was the first night that I was in there. So then after that, my bail was never, they never posted a bail for anybody to come bail me out. My mom called every day. She drove the dispatchers crazy. And then finally on the 5th day, I went to court and they posted my bail after that. Where do you go from there? You know, what's next? I haven't used drugs in 5 days, so I'm feeling like almost in a clear state of mind, but also I just got out of jail.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like a whole new person than I was before that, but also it's not an improvement.
Right. Now you've got even more experience in that world under your belt.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Now I've been to jail and I hung out with some, you know, rough ladies and we braided each other's hair in the day room. Like,
I was about to be like, "Did you get your hair braided?"
Yes.
I really was about to say
that's,
that.
Yeah, that's it. Oh. And so, you know, now I've got that under my belt.
Mm-hmm.
While I was in there, though, my son's father and his girlfriend filed for emergency temporary custody, and he came to visit me while I was in there. My son's father, by himself, just kind of wanted, what he said was, he just wanted to see, you know, how I was, you know, what was going to happen, discuss some things, and he puts these papers up to the glass window, and I said, "I'm not signing those," because I was stubborn, mm-hmm. and because at the time, I didn't see really that there was still really any problem with what was happening. Obviously, I knew that I'm in some trouble, you mm-hmm. know. Hindsight's 20/20, and I'm still just like there, living it, day by day, you know, not thinking about the future, not thinking about where I'm headed or things, playing the victim, you know, oh, well, we got kicked out of our house and blah, blah, blah. I'm not taking responsibility for my own actions. And so I'm not signing those papers. I'm that kid's mom, you know? So anyways, that started a whole thing. Now I'm staying at my parents for a while. I'm trying to do what I'm supposed to. And my granny is sick. She's getting older. She stays at my grandma's, but she stays in her own trailer. And at this point, she's getting up in the middle of the night and she's falling. So now it seems like a wonderful place in my life, convenient for everyone, for me and Trace, to move in at my granny's house and, you know, be there so my grandma can sleep in her own bed at her side of, you know, the compound. And so that's what we did. And I was clean for a while. I was very attentive to my granny. We sat and we played cards and we watched TV together. And I, you know, my grandma and I took care of her. Her and Trace got very close. And I started using again here and there. And bless my grandmother's heart. For the longest time, she just believed me. She believed she would go to bat for me to anyone. And she believed that I wasn't using. I was guilty. I felt guilty. But then I just used meth to not feel guilty anymore, you know? But that's something that I had to work through later, is the guilt of her being so adamant and just believing every word that I said when all the while I was getting high. I remember my grandma waking me up very early in the morning, and my granny was on her way out of this world. Me, my granny's sister, and my grandma sat there with her as she took her last breath. And that was a huge hit for me as well. I helped the coroner carry her out of the house. Then I went to work at Wendy's, and then I used more meth. I was an on-again, off-again employee at Wendy's. I worked really well there, but me and the owner, we had a love-hate relationship. I adore the lady, and she loves me very much. And then we'd both have a bad day at the same time, and we'd get into it about something ridiculous. And then I'd quit, or she'd fire me.
Right.
And then, you know, a few weeks later, she'd either text me saying she really needed me, and she loved me, and she just wished that, you know, I would do this different or whatever, and or vice versa. And I'd come back. I think I hold the record of the most times hired and fired and rehired at Wendy's. I don't know that that's something to be proud of, but it's a thing. I got arrested on October the 13th of 2013. And okay, let me just slap some dates out here for you. So I started using in December of 2011. I was arrested on October the 13th of 2013. I pled into drug court in March of 2014. And for anybody who doesn't know, drug court is a one-year program, and then you have so many years. Mine was 4 years total, so 1 year in drug court and 3 years supervised probation. I also had $5,000 in fines to pay, monthly supervision fees, and 320 hours of community service to do. That was all wrapped up in my sentence.
Drug court, what, real quick, what does that, what are the benefits of going into drug court versus just, you know, regular sentencing?
So the thing that got my attention was the fact that if I did what they asked me and I completed the program, I had the opportunity to get my record expunged.
Right.
And not be a felon for the rest of my life. And honestly, at the time, that is the only reason that I took drug court.
Not because you wanted to get better, but because you did not want that on your record.
Correct. Yes. That's 100% correct. I came into the program very high, or not necessarily went in there high, but I got really high before I went for days. Like, I was all, well, I guess we'll just go out like this. You know what I mean? Yeah, go big or go home.
Yep.
Lord have mercy. And so I obviously failed my very first drug test, and I was terrified. I was like, well, I guess I'll just go to prison. But like, I couldn't stop. I don't.
The thought of prison was not scary enough.
No.
No.
It wasn't. None of it was. But, you know, once I got settled into the program, I did. I did try to stay clean for a while. Now, that doesn't mean that I planned to stay that way once I finished the program. I just thought like, okay, well, we'll just slither our way through here, and then
I can go back to normal life once this is over.
However, I want to. Then, of course, I relapsed and I began using on the weekends, and I did some math and some science. I don't know, rumors and things that people come up with in their mind as to how long it takes for the meth to get out of your system, how much water you could drink. Oh, there's so many things
that I like people your air say. Quotes with science.
Yes, yeah, that was science. Great. It's for science.
Breaking Bad type science.
That's exactly right. Meth addicts have a whole world of science that they believe to be true. I just slowly but surely just slid back into everyday use. Use mostly, you know. For a while I skated around like that, you know. I would, because for drug court you meet twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays you have group, but all week long you call every morning and you have a color, and if they call your color, you have to come in for a random drug test. So if I used on the weekends, I knew that by Tuesday I'd be clean. But every once in a while, my color would get called on Monday and I would just make up an excuse. Oh, I forgot to call. Oh, I was at work. Oh, I was sick. Whatever, you know, and that only worked for so long, obviously, but that all just snowballed into failed drug tests and messy business.
What about those mornings when you're not just super duper hungry?
They have all the coffees.
All the coffees?
All the coffees.
But you're not mentioning the most amazing coffee they have.
Well, tell me about it.
The Frostychino, man.
What is that?
Dude, they literally take like frosty mix and put it with coffee. So it's like an iced frosty. It's a miracle. It's an iced frosty miracle.
I want a frosty coffee miracle. What do they call it? A Frostychino or something?
A Frostychino for sure. Do you know that right now you can cash in on the 2 for $4 breakfast special?
And save my money? Oh yeah.
You can download their app and you get 10 points for every dollar you spend at Wendy's. And right now you get $3 off every mobile order over $15. If you're like us and you love Wendy's and you need more in your life, make sure and visit the Wendy's location nearest you. Because remember, Wendy's is always fresh, always hot, and always satisfying.
I never came to group high, but they would always know when I was using because, as you guys know, I'm a very outgoing, outspoken, bright, bubbly type of person. That's the personality that I have. I like to help others. I like to share. I like to talk. I'm a talker. Whenever I was using, I would be late. I would come in grumpy.
Because you weren't high at the time.
I wasn't high at the time. Right. You know, yeah. I couldn't even imagine going to group high. Mm-hmm. I see people in there and I was like, wow, how could you? I would be so uncomfortable, you know, but I was definitely coming down and I was definitely not feeling well, you know, and it's a joke now because I volunteer at the drug court office and my wife actually works at the drug court office now. And so I actually spend a lot of time in there. I tell them that I'm an unpaid employee. And so last month I deemed myself, you know, employee of the month there. nobody else did, but I think I was the employee of the month.
I bet you
I was. Actually. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a win. Yeah.
I'm hanging full up. Faith.
Thank you. But it's a joke because when I was in group and I was doing well, I would bring donuts every morning because I, first of all, love donuts. And second of all, we would go to group in the morning, like early, like 8 o'clock. And who doesn't want donuts at 7:30?
And these are addicts.
Yeah. And
sugar and
coffee. Food and coffee. That's it. Yes. That's our thing. And so whenever I was using, I wouldn't bring donuts, mostly because I didn't have any money, you know, I mean, and so that's the joke. It's still a joke now. I've been clean for 5 years and out of the drug court program for 4, and it's still a joke when I go in there. Sometimes we talk about it and we're like, well, Keena brought the donuts, you know.
Yeah. Everything must be okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So in there, I finally failed enough drug tests and did enough mischief to be sentenced to 90 days treatment at the Arkansas Community Corrections Pine Bluff unit.
That's rough.
Yeah.
I love our beautiful state, but I do try to avoid that area.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I went in thinking that I was getting treatment. And I still didn't have like a do better attitude. You know, I was still in the skate by and move on with your life, doing whatever the heck you want to attitude. So, but I think I'm going for treatment. So I'm like, well, maybe I'll learn something, you know. And I think I even brushed it off to my family. Like I had a couple failed drug tests, but I hadn't been paying my supervision fees. And, you know, that's just how the program goes kind of thing.
More victim mentality stuff.
Of course. Yes. And so I did 90 days in this program. And let me tell you, there were good days and there were awful times. It wasn't as treatment-based as it was supposed to be. A lot of times there was stuff that would go on that wasn't supposed to.
Was it by the book?
It wasn't by the book. It wasn't by the book. We didn't, like I said, we didn't get the treatment we were supposed to get. A lot of days they would just pile literally the entire compound into this big gym. And so let me tell you, it was a compound setup. It used to be like a boys' school. Mm-hmm. So there was separate buildings that we would stay in.
Like dorm style.
Like dorms, And they separated us by like, you know, the time that we had. We were all short-term. All short-term were in one unit together. Mm-hmm. But during the day, they just throw us in this big gym and we were just in there and we had to sit and be quiet. And sometimes we could walk around the gym for like, quote unquote, exercise. And sometimes we weren't allowed to. And we just sat in there for hours and made trouble, you know, talked when we weren't supposed to, like high school, you know, it was kind of, I don't know. Anyways, I did not receive any treatment. There were times that we were treated poorly. It just all around wasn't a good time.
No.
It wasn't a good time.
It was not the help that you needed.
It did not help me at all. It didn't give me an idea of how I needed to be different or do different. It made me realize that I don't ever want to live in Pine Bluff. And that was about as good as I got out of it.
That's all you learned.
That's all I learned.
I do not want to live in Pine Bluff.
Yeah,
there we go.
That's exactly right. And so I came home and I didn't want to go back to that place. So I came home and I did well. For the longest I had ever done well. I went back to the job that I had at Pisano's and they were gracious enough to give me my job back.
During this time that you were doing well, were you receiving any outside support? Were you attending anything like NA or AA or you're doing it all on your own?
Yeah, I didn't. Okay. Well, I have... My family is a pretty good support system, and then I had a very close friend of mine. We're still close today. He was a coworker with me at Pisano's, and he actually really held me down all the way through my stay in Pine Bluff. Mm-hmm. He sent me money for commissary. You know, we would talk on the phone. He helped if my parents couldn't afford to put the money on the phone. He'd make sure that there was money on the phone for my parents to talk to me. And so, you know, I came out to live with my grandma, but I spent a lot of time with him. I was just existing, and I wasn't high. We like to call that a dry drunk. I didn't necessarily. I felt better, mm-hmm. you know.
But the desire was there.
In the back of my mind, I knew that I couldn't tell myself that I would never use again. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, I was just coasting through life.
And what's the situation with your son at this
situation
point?
With my son, he lived with his dad and his stepmom. I don't think they were married at the time, but and I had supervised visits with my grandma or with my mom or whatever, but I wasn't allowed to, you know. We could like hang out with my friend Matt and we'd go play tennis or we'd do whatever, but otherwise very supervised visits. But I was trying to get my custody back. Mm-hmm. I had hired a lawyer. We were going through the process. We were doing all the stuff. I decide that I need to buy a truck. And obviously I don't have any credit, but I need this truck and I'm doing so well and I deserve it, you know, I think. So my friend Matt and we go to a finance company and he co-signs for me to get a loan for this truck. So I do really well and I'm paying the bills and I'm really proud of what I have. And, you know, I think at that time I could kind of see like there's some good that comes out of not using, yeah. you know.
Having your life in order can make you feel better.
Well, and people are proud of me too, mm-hmm. you know.
You're getting validation from Absolutely. Outside sources.
And let me tell you something. Hearing I'm proud of you never gets any less awkward to respond to. Okay, I'm just going to let you guys know that. Today, I'm still like, oh, okay, thank you. You know, like, mm-hmm. what do you say to that? Like, oh, you used to be a screw up and mm-hmm. we're glad you're not doing that anymore.
Right.
Oh, yes, thank you. Pat me on the back. Like, I feel so awkward receiving those kinds of compliments, but I also appreciate them, you know. Mm-hmm. So anyways, here I am, 8 months clean, hired a lawyer for custody of my son. I've bought a truck. Things are great. All that I can think about doing is showing this truck off to my ex-girlfriend. I hadn't had any contact with her since I left for treatment. And since I got home, neither of us have said a word to each other. And just one day I thought, I'll message her and see how things are going. And so let me tell you, every time that happened, because I went back a lot of times to that situation, in the back of my mind, I knew that I would get there and at some point I would get high. And that was it. You know, that was my subconscious like thought, even if it wasn't in the forefront of my mind, that is initially what would drive me, my motivation
right.
to message her or to seek her out or whatever the situation was. And I will say right now, I say it all the time. I correct people. I am the only one responsible for my actions. I'm the only one responsible for my addiction. I am the only one responsible for any and every single thing that I have done in my life. No one else. Not my girlfriend, not the first friend that I did meth with, not her sister who sold us the meth, not the person who made the meth. That's all on me. And so I like to make that known and clarify that. But I knew that that was still the lifestyle that they were leading. And so I would end up in there. Everyone in my family, my son's father and his wife, they make her out to be the bad guy. And our relationship was toxic mm-hmm. at best. But she always felt bad when I would come out and I would end up using. And so that reason, and also, you know, just because I know that I make my own choices as a person, I like to clarify that, you know, it's all on me. Mm-hmm. She's not a bad guy or a bad person, you know, she's an addict and so am I. So I end up out there. It's just like a snowball every time, rolling down the dang hill mm-hmm. into being irresponsible and blowing off my job and only coming in long enough to make enough tips to buy more meth, you know? And at some point in time, I remember being so exhausted and just coming down in the morning, and I would come to work and I would tell my friend, like, I don't feel good, or I have a headache, or I didn't sleep well, or I'm sick, or whatever the case may be, and go in the back and lay down. And he would work the morning half of my shift while I slept, and he would give me the tip money, and I would be on the clock. Mm-hmm. You know, just to help me to feel better. Mm-hmm. Because he obviously knew I needed money because I'm supposed to be making this truck payment. And that was a real thing for me to do. But addicts do things. And they think about one thing, and that's their next tie.
And the people that care about addicts, that do everything they can to help them, to make their life easier. It's so hard for people who love addicts.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
To see that line of caring, mm-hmm, and enabling.
Yeah. How do I decide what's being helpful and what's allowing them to continue in their negative behavior? And then also there's the line where, well, what's enabling their behavior and what's just being shitty to them, you know, turning your back on them, making them feel alone.
That's the feeling right there that I remember, mm-hmm, being in that situation, trying to determine, yeah, what was enabling and what was making them feel bad.
Yeah.
Not wanting them to realize that they were so miserable in their life, wanting to do anything you could to help them. But when you're told to step away, to block this, to stop giving them money, to stop making excuses for them, you're going, well, what am I doing to them? It's just going to make them worse.
Right.
If you don't give that support.
Right. That's it.
Complete opposite,
though. If I leave them alone, then they will think they have no one, and then they'll just continue to use, mm-hmm, because they're lonely and, you know.
Or something worse.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, Jerry, you know how I was mentioning that I really needed a new couch?
Mm-hmm.
Look at this one I found online.
I mean, that's great and all, but why are you looking for furniture online?
Well, because of the selection and the price. And
that's absolutely ridiculous. You have the same selection and better prices, and you can actually sit and experience the furniture you're going to get for your home at Don's Easy Pay.
Oh, yeah. Aren't they the one who's been family-owned and operated for like 40 years?
Yes, they are, and they offer all the brands you're going to find online. Like Ashley, GE, Whirlpool, Catnapper, Samsung, England Furniture, Speed Queen, and more. If you visit the store and it's not there for you to sit on, and experience, they can special order for you. You can have anything you want there, and the prices are going to really reflect in your pocketbook.
So, like, the same Ashley furniture that I'm looking at online, I can get at Don's?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, what about delivery setup? Because, you know, shopping online, I get delivery.
Yeah, shopping online, then you've got your delivery fees, your shipping fees, taxes, yada, yada, yada. You go to Don's, you see the price tag, taxes included, delivery fee included, any financing options included in the price on the tag. No math.
Okay, well, what about other stuff? What if I don't just need a couch? What else do they have?
Oh my gosh, every major appliance for your washroom, your kitchen. They've even got game systems, vacuums, stuff for home and garden. If you need it for your house, you can go to Don's and get it. You can also go to Don's and get tires. I mean, really, anything that you need, you can get it at Don's.
Well, you know, I'm really hard on my appliances. What if something breaks?
Not to worry, because Don's does all of the appliance work on things that you buy from them. Things like washers, dryers, ranges, refrigerators, and freezers. So you buy it from them, it breaks, they're going to help you out with appliance repair.
Well, this place that I was shopping online, they had like financing options. Does Don's have that too?
Yes, absolutely. All right, so they've got the retail, like if you just buy it, they've got the price there. You can rent to own it, or you can do 180 days same as cash, or you can do 6 months same as cash for anything over $1,000. And all of that has the tax and delivery, everything included in the price.
So the price on the piece is the price that I would be paying.
Yeah, price on the piece is the price that you pay.
All right, so where all is Don's at? I mean, where do I go?
If you live in Arkansas, you're pretty much close to it. I mean, you've got one in Mena, Waldron, DeQueen, Broken Bow, Idabel, Poto, and they're also going to be doing this really cool new home store in Boonville.
So Don's home store in Boonville.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So can I find them online too?
Yeah. So you just get on Facebook and search Don's Easy Pay and then put in your location like Mena or Waldron, Idabel or Boonville. And you can look at their Facebook page, give them a call, find their address, and just stop in and see what they can do for you.
So basically, if I need it for my home, Don's Easy Pay has it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, dude, let's go. Car. Shopping trip.
One day my truck breaks down. Just the rear end went out on it, just like regular maintenance stuff, you know. And I let the tweakers try to fix it. For anyone who doesn't know, it's never done right if a tweaker's trying to fix it.
Duct tape, zip ties.
And it's always done in the dark, too. I don't know. We don't do anything during the day. And so that was the last time I drove my truck. Mm-hmm. It never ended up all the way fixed. It did end up fixed enough to make it into town from out in Yaconee where I was staying. But then it just...
Well, you're lucky you didn't end up with, like, a skylight in it. Yeah. And, like, a, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely.
A whole nother level to the truck bed.
There were things that
turned into a boat. Happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so.
You didn't drive it. You floated it.
I floated it. Yes. On the big wheels keep on turning. So now it's in town. It's broken down. And I end up, I guess, at the time, it seemed like I was rescued from the situation that I was in, from the relationship that I had gotten myself back into, where I was just a pawn in someone else's game and I was just used for whatever I had that they wanted, because that's how your friends and your people are in addiction. Not all of them, but most of them. And so here comes this guy, married guy that also does meth. He began to give me the attention that I was giving to other people and not receiving back. And one day he's like, why do you live like this? You know, why do you allow them, these people who stay at this place, to treat you this way? And I couldn't give him an answer. Because I care for these people. Because I love this woman. You know, I don't know. Because I'm an addict. And I'm codependent. I have a lot of things that I need to work through. And I'm a disaster. That was the right answer. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know that. And I didn't know how to answer that question. But I knew he was right. So what did I do? I packed up my stuff and I hopped in this truck with this married man. And we went and slept on someone's couch. And I just thought that I was being rescued. Now, I will say that I did know he was married. The situation was obviously made out a little different to me than what it really was. You know, she was the bad guy and blah, 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 blah. The marriage was on the rocks anyways. What guys say whenever they want to rope somebody into whatever they've got going on. I'm sure women say that too. Kicks his wife out of the house and just moved me in. And that was, you know, a mess in its own. She showed up one night and, I don't know, you know, was upset. This is her house. That's her husband. That's my bed, you know? And I was in it. And I understood that. I even sympathized with that. I didn't feel good about it. Now, like I said, it was different pretenses, what I thought, you know. She tried to beat me up. I tried to just hold her off. I wasn't going to engage in physical violence with her. I let her do whatever she wanted, you know. There were some punches thrown and some basically just like wrestling, you know. But she was very upset. And I felt that for her, you know. And I just let her scream it out and wallow around. She pulled my hair. And the whole time, you know, I just tried to hold her at bay until she could hash it out, you know, with inside herself. That's a big part of like me that I didn't like. But I just kept doing meth, you know. And I moved on from whatever situations came like that, you know, like, oh, this isn't right, but we'll just do meth about it.
We'll just do meth about it. Yeah.
That's a thing that I still use today. I'm like, well, you can't just do meth about it. But back then I thought I could just do meth about it. So that went on for, you know, a little bit of time. At this point, the people are calling because I haven't made a truck payment. My boss wonders where I'm at because I haven't been to work. The biggest thing is my probation officer is calling because I haven't shown up for group and I haven't drug tested and I just ghosted them basically. At this point, I know people are messaging me. I know there's a warrant out for my arrest for, you know, absconding. And I'm just piled up in this married man's house, having some sort of dream that I'll take care of all this and we'll live a regular life or whatever. He has a motorcycle. We just go ride the motorcycle. We go to the casino. I don't even like the casino, but I mean, we were doing meth. And so I'm just going to be there and look cute, I guess, you know. And he was a good looking guy and he did his own business. And so I'm like, oh, well, ideally, I'll just be like your little secretary and you can do roofs and we'll be so successful and we'll do meth. But that quickly came to a halt whenever I had to look over my shoulder constantly. The cops would come knocking and we just wouldn't answer. My truck was parked at the house, so it was obvious that's where I was at. It was a very distinct truck. And so we'd go from his place to his stepmom's house and, you know, we were just very careful where we went, what we did, how long I was outside. He had tomato plants and a lot of them, and I love fresh tomatoes off the vine, and so I would literally sneak outside and just, like, constantly, like, head on a swivel to pick tomatoes.
Not the kind of existence you want to be living. Anybody wants to be living. Were you picking tomatoes in the middle of the night?
Yeah.
As tweakers do?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. And I still not thinking about, like, what I will be doing next. just making it through today. And I don't know, I guess that went on for a couple months. All the while, I didn't respond to anyone's messages. I didn't talk to my mom. She had started making posts that I was missing. I had people messaging me that like, hey, just message your mom. And I was mad about it. I'm like, mom, you're embarrassing me.
Mm-hmm.
Embarrassing me.
Right.
When all the while I was embarrassing myself and mm-hmm. I was embarrassing my whole family and I had my mom worried sick. But I was stubborn and I didn't say anything to her and I ignored everybody's messages. And people were terrified for my life. One day, they came and repoed my truck. They just took it and we weren't there, but the neighbor behind us that was friends with this guy that I was with, he messaged and said, you know, that he saw him taking the truck. I was like, yeah, whatever. It didn't go anywhere anyways, you know. But because of that, there was a report made of a repo. The truck was registered and all that stuff in my name. And so anyways, that night, he had fallen asleep at his stepmom's house, but she didn't have air conditioner and I was hot and I was cranky and I was like, I'm going to go. Somebody take me over to the house, to his house, and I'll just go to bed by myself, like, so I can sleep in the air conditioner. That was, like, midnight that night. At about 2:30 in the morning, I hear banging on the door, on the window. That's how I wake up, okay? I'm just sleeping, regular sleeping, and someone's banging on all the doors and windows, and I know it's the middle of the night, and I am panicked. I'm there by myself. Is it the cops? Is it somebody looking for drugs or money? I don't know. So I just lay there. You know, if you're quiet long enough, they'll go away. But then it just keeps happening. And then finally I hear a voice call my name out. And it was his stepmom and a friend of hers. And they had come to check on me because I was alone. So I answer the door and they're like, we were just worried about you. I had a weird feeling, she said. And I was like, I'm just sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, are you sure you're okay here by yourself? I'm like, listen, I've stayed and lived by myself a lot of times, you know, like, yes, I'm fine. Well, I'm just real worried. And I said, okay, if you want me to come back to the house and stay there, then I will, if that's going to make you feel better. And she said she would, that would feel make her feel better. You know, she was worried about me being alone. And I was like, okay. So as I turned to go into the house to get my things to go with them, she said, are you expecting someone? And of course I said no, because I was sleeping. She said, now the road that we lived on made a horseshoe. And so the road up from that, if you take it, it just curved around. She said, well, I just saw a white car turn on to the other road with its lights off. And I said, it's going to be the cops. And sure enough, no sooner than the conversation, you know, took place, he comes around the other side. And I just run into the house. I leave the front door wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And I lock myself in the bedroom. Because I don't know what else to do. I'm not ready to go to jail. You know, I've been absconding for months. My boyfriend's sleeping at somebody else's house. And I was just trying to take a nap. And I don't know what I thought was going to happen. It's a warrant for my arrest. They'll just come in and get you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they did. They come in and he's knocking on the door. And I'm like, 900 things are going through my brain right now. Like, do I wait till everyone's in the house and I climb out the window and run? Like, where would I go? I'm making this whole plan in my head. All the while, they're at the door telling me they're going to kick it down. And I'm going to tell you, you don't have to put this in here, but this is really funny. It was that was at the door knocking,
mm-hmm.
and he was saying, Kina, come out or we're going to kick the door down. And I'm thinking to myself, you're not kicking the door down. It's a deadbolt. And he said, it'll be easier if you just come out. And I'm like, nah. Listen, I've been going for so long. You're going to work for it. I'm not giving up like that, you know? So I'm just in there. Well, I hear one kick, two kick, not happening.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes outside. And see, when they first got there, I peeked out the window. So I see that there's two of them
now. Of course you peeked out the window.
Of course I did.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two of them. And one of them, I can see his silhouette, you know. I referred to him as the big beefy cop. I said, he's got to go outside and get the big beefy cop. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, if you're going to run, this is it. You know, this is the time. They're both going to be in the house and it's time to go. But then I still think to myself, like, where am I going to run to?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I try to hide under the bed. I drop the bed on myself. It was a whole mess. They kick the door in.
Stay tuned. Next Friday, we'll have Kina Ashcraft back on for another full-length episode. Thank you for listening to The Washington Chronicles, brought to you by Don's Easy Pay.